This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by Elan House of Wellness, the mother-led brand that's dedicated to nurturing, nourishing, and empowering new mothers and families. I've eaten my way through so many of their incredibly nourishing dry food packs, like the dark chocolate banana bread, golden kitchery, and blooming bites. And you're in luck, because some of my favourite products are currently 20% off. In my opinion, a better nourished postpartum leads to a better return to paid work and a happier parent all around. So support and nourish yourself today with Elan House of Wellness.
Doing 100 jobs at the moment. At that stage, there were 60 employees and they all pretty much reported directly to me. I was vomiting from 4 a.m. till 10 p.m. I was more worried about people treating her like she was something less than what she was. I was trying to control everything. Being a full-time mum is harder than being a boss to 75 women.
I know what I'm about to say is exactly how I open my conversation with Francesca Jewelry founder Hannah Vasicek, but it's impossible for me to paint a picture of the vibrant person that she is in any other way. When I first met Hannah at an event, she said that her mind is like a city. She said it's one of the reasons why she loves living in the quiet but creative Hobart, the city where she started small by selling her jewellery at the iconic Salamanca markets. Fast forward to today, and alongside her sister, she leads a team of 75. And at home, alongside her husband, she leads a much smaller, but arguably more demanding, more adorable team of 2 children. As you're about to learn, there's so much that I could say about Hannah's journey into motherhood and career. She employs an incredible group of refugee women and is really passionate about supporting the migrant community. Her daughter was born with a limb difference, and she opens up about navigating this privately during pregnancy as a normally really open person. And she naively, her words, not mine, thought that motherhood would be a break. From the stories of survival and sacrifice from the incredible women she employs, to her experience in navigating her daughter's limb difference, here, Hannah shares what she's learned professionally and personally along the way. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the soulful and smart Hannah Vasicek. Hannah, when I first met you at an event at the Memo, you said to me that your mind was like a city, and it's not something that you forget someone saying. And I want to know, what's all the noise pollution, traffic jams in your mind right now?
Oh, man. We're in the thick of our Mother's Day campaign. So it's our, after Christmas, it's our busiest time of year at work. I'm actually doing 100 jobs at the moment. And one of my team members, we just had a meeting and she looks over to me and she's like, how many tabs are open in your mind right now? And I was like, don't even get me started. So there's a lot of congestion right now in my city. And then as well, I think I had just had Elijah perhaps when we met. So I've got 2 children as well. And I'm attempting to be as much a, full-time mum as I can whilst being a CEO of a company of 75 people. So yeah, there's a lot going on.
Just a little bit keeping you busy. So as you say, you own a business with your sister that has 75 staff. Mm-hmm. How did you get there? Because it's a great story, I believe, starting small at markets, perhaps?
Yes. I'll give you the short version because it can go on for a while. But I think growing up, we lived in a really remote town in New South Wales. There really wasn't that much there. And as a kid, I was a really busy kid. And, just one of those kids that I now have that just is a lot, super enthusiastic. That's what was on all of my report cards at school. And my mum took me to a beading store when I was 12, and I made my first pair of earrings when I was 12 and just fell in love. I just couldn't imagine, I couldn't believe that I could make something that then someone would, wear. And my creative brain just went a bit nuts from there. And I started making jewellery nonstop and moved to Tasmania when I was 16. And at that stage, going from a really remote small town to Hobart was like moving to New York City. So for me, the world is my oyster. And that's when I started the business. Rachel is actually 6 years younger than me. So she was 10 at the time. I was 16 and started down at Salamanca Markets. So yeah, 16, every week I would get dropped off by mum with a card table, a bag of jewelry, and just start selling. And it just grew. So yeah, I studied for 5 years, 2 degrees, science and law, because I didn't think that I could be a businesswoman as a career, you know, just didn't think that that was something that people do.
Do you think you always just thought of it as like a hobby type thing, did you?
Oh, 100%. Well, it's one of those things that even my dad was always like, oh yeah, Hannah makes and sells trinkets, you know. It was very much, I come from that family of, you know, my mum was a stay-at-home mum of 4 children. My dad was, you know, traveling the world for work. And it was definitely, I was like, oh, you know, it's just my passion. And then I was still trying to pave my way, you know, into law and things like that. So it wasn't until fifth year law that I literally was like, oh, maybe I think I actually do have a business. Because by that time, people were wearing it. We were selling out every week. Rachel was then working with me. And so it was then that I turned down a full-time law career and opened our first store in 2013. And it's just been wild since then. So yeah, it's just been growth. We went to the Hollywood Golden Globes a year after that to showcase the jewelry over there, which was mad. We opened our Melbourne store, and now we have an online store that ships internationally, and that does pretty much 90% of our trade alongside our 2 stores.
Oh my word, that is quite incredible. So you study this course, I guess, that perhaps feels a bit more intelligent and corporate and careery. Was there any self-talk about picking something that felt a bit more creative and, as you say, a bit more like a hobby? Like, did you have to check yourself and perhaps a bit of ego of, I studied this really smart thing and now I'm choosing jewelry? At the time, you didn't know how big it would be.
It's funny because, I don't know, for me, it was more about really realizing that I was passionate about something very different to what I'd spent 5 years of my life studying for. So I did do an internship at a Sydney law firm, and I would get all of my work done, and then by lunchtime I'd gotten all the day's worth of work done, and I was like secretly googling like jewelry wholesale sites and things like that. So for me, it was more so not really an ego thing, just a like, I don't want to work for anyone else. And you know, I feel like my personality is not easily tamed to that corporate. It was more so of like, what have I done? Like, have I wasted 5 years and a huge hex bill only to realize that I love jewelry?
Yeah, I love that so much. And I don't mean that in a way that choosing the path of jewelry is frivolous or less, but I know a lot of people, a lot of friends of mine that have studied something more sciencey and then gone, fuck, I actually don't want to do this. And they've had to have conversation with their very intelligent parents about, no, that's not my path at all. So I find it fascinating when people then pick something more creative, but I guess you're the business owner too, so we'll probably learn that there's...
I did have that conversation though with my dad, because I just finished my 5 years of law. I deliberately didn't apply for any jobs because just innately I just knew something was just not in alignment. And I got headhunted by one of the top firms in Tasmania, and they sat me down for the interview. I told my parents, because I was like, oh, look at this, you know, they never hire outside of their clerkship program, but they want me. But they grilled me and they said, you have a month to decide between the business and the job. And that's when my gut dropped, and I was like, 100% my dad is going to tell me to just, you know, do the job so that you can get ready so that you can have babies one day. And like, literally, so I remember sitting in the car park and I rang him, and I was like, told him, I was like, I've just been offered a really great position. And he actually surprised me. He turned around and he said, do what makes you time rich. And it was such a pivotal moment in my life. And I realized like there and then, because my dad had a career where, you know, he was still able to be very hands-on with us as children and things like that. But I knew that if I was a lawyer, I would be a slave to that system. You know, I have the grit where I want to work my way up. I probably wouldn't have kids right now when I do. So yeah, I did what I thought would make me time rich.
Do what makes your tie rich. That actually gave me goosebumps. That is such a beautiful sentiment, and what a great leader you obviously have. So then you've grown this huge business that by the time motherhood enters the picture must have been well on its way, I imagine. How does motherhood enter the chat for you? Is it something you're stressed about as a business owner?
Well, the first thing as a business owner, my first call out was that I had a really different experience to a lot of my friends who aren't business owners. So I think it was I was 28, 29, and I was going to functions and networking things with my friends. And no joke, all of them were asked, when are you going to have kids? And I never had anyone ask.
Interesting.
At this age, I had, 60 employees. I was very career focused. People just didn't ask me. And first of all, I thought that was bizarre because it's like, I'm the same age as these guys. I had been married for 4 years at this stage. Firstly, being in a position where I was a CEO to a lot of people just didn't ask me when I was having babies. Found that really odd. And for me, I went through years of burnout and I was so obsessed with business that I can understand why people just didn't even think that. But for me, I always said, babies are going to be the only thing that slows me down. For me, that was kind of motherhood for me. I had this period of my life where I realized that I didn't have an identity outside of business. And it was a really sad moment. Like, the business had made it. We were doing amazingly. We had a huge team. But I realized that I was the business. And, my sister and I, we didn't have a relationship outside the business. We'd just talk about it because we were so obsessed with it. So motherhood for me, finding out I was pregnant was actually, really amazing. It actually did really slow me down.
And I think it was also potentially a little bit daunting for you because you all of a sudden realized the weight of responsibility that you had at work and how you had mixed that with motherhood. Tell us about how you moved through pregnancy, both emotionally and also physically, how you felt as a business owner moving through pregnancy.
Yeah, I was that really naive person that thought the motherhood was going to be a massive break. And I'd tell everyone, I run a high-powered business, I'm going to write a book by the time the baby's 6 weeks old. Like, it's going to be the best holiday ever. So for me, my journey was actually, an interesting one because it started 2019. I actually started in hospital for 5 days, unable to function. I was just burnt out. I had a kidney infection that was just raging, and I had pushed myself so far and not listened to my body that I just was rushed to hospital and I could not even open my eyes for 5 days. So this is January 2019, got pumped with IV fluids, got pumped with, you name it, and got discharged 6 days later and felt amazing. I was like, oh, that was the best rest I've ever had in my life. Flew to Hong Kong for our annual buying trip, which is where we designed for the year. So I just went straight back into just, crazy business.
You're like, I'll just do that every year and then I'll be fine again.
Exactly. I know, you're right. I was like, if the tags are good, then we're good. But my body obviously loved it because the day I landed home, we conceived Vienna, my first daughter. And I had always thought it was really weird because we hadn't been really, using protection or anything for 2.5 years. I literally was like, there must be something wrong with me. I was surprised. We weren't trying, but as well, I was like, it's really odd that, we haven't really had any scares. But we'd gone away for a weekend, my husband and I, a few weeks later, and I felt really tired. Like, normally I have energy till 11 p.m. and I was falling asleep at 6 o'clock. And then the next day I had this smoothie and I was like, oh, I feel like I'm going to vomit. And then I messaged my sister and I was like, she's like, are you pregnant? I was like, oh. And I kind of didn't say, I was like, no, And then I was like, oh, I actually could be. And I was. And so for me, I remember when I found out. And I'm really blessed, on that journey. We know as well, there was only one time in that month when I landed home that it could have been. But my heart just dropped because I just, in that moment, I thought, how is this going to be possible? Like, how am I going to be able to, I'd already, had my husband being like, something's got to give. And now I'm pregnant. And it was just a real scary moment of how I'm going to do this.
What did happen next? How did you plan for it? Were there any mentors that you sought out in the space?
Yeah, 100%. So the first thing that I did, I really did a bit of a life audit as to where my energy was going. For me, you know, at that stage, there were 60 employees and they all pretty much reported directly to me. And also, I was really passionate about the well-being and the culture of the company, but it was one of my biggest energy zaps. So as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I actually messaged this woman who we've wanted to coach in the business for years. And she also, you know, had said a few times, like, oh, I'd love to work for you, things like that. And I said, I need you. Like, I need you in the business because I know I need someone who's going to be our people and culture person and look after the staff like I would when I'm not there. And she literally was like, if this had been 2 weeks ago, yes, but I've just taken a job. And it was just like, what? We did later get her when she lost her job during COVID and Vienna was 12 weeks old. But that whole journey of motherhood, you know, when I was pregnant, was my main focus was how can I elevate leaders within the business so that they can support me and so I'm not the direct, you know, number for the Melbourne store to call to approve a refund on the weekend. So that was my first port of call. The business was going well. I actually just needed support. Rachel was amazing when she found out that I was pregnant. She was like, I've got this, you know, like I will help take over the reins. She's a real creative, so not so much the business side of things, but, you know, she stepped up amazingly. And yeah, thank goodness, because pregnancy for me was rough.
So tell us about that. How did you actually get through it physically?
Oh man, I've actually got photos that I still look at, like selfies of myself. There's one selfie that I ended up posting on Instagram of me in an inside out fleece jumper at 4 a.m. vomiting because I wanted to remind myself like not to do this again to anytime soon. But for me, you know, I'm not one of those great glowing pregnant ladies. I think it was from 5 weeks till 27 weeks with Vienna. I was vomiting from 4 a.m. till 10 p.m., just horrifically exhausted. You know, from a physical standpoint, it was a tough pregnancy. And then from a mental standpoint, you know, I was so excited, so elated. And then at the 12-week scan, it was when, you know, the world came crashing down and the pregnancy turned into like a mental marathon.
Yes. So tell us about that. That was going to be my next question. Eventually you find out that Vienna will be born without her right arm, I believe. Tell us about that time.
Yeah. So 12 weeks, it was a 12-week scan, which is, you know, the week before I was going to tell everyone before Mother's Day. I was probably also pushing my body a fair bit. You know, I was up in Brisbane for an influencer event and then I'd just flown home, walked into the scan with BJ, my husband. And it's the scan, you know, where they, you know, count everything and look over everything. And then about 30 minutes into the scan, the sonographer kind of hesitated and she was just like staying on the same spot for a bit. And then she excused herself from the room. And I just turned around and I looked at BJ and I was like, something's wrong. It was the worst just feeling ever. And then she came back in the room with an older woman and the older woman was beautiful. And she happens to be one of the most high up sonographers that happened to be there that day. And she goes, we're just going to, you know, we're just going to look at the little ones. And I was like, what the heck is going on? And you just like, literally, it was the worst feeling ever. Just being like, is everything okay? And so then essentially what it was you could see she had her whole right arm. It was like chicken winged up in the scan. So it's kind of folded up on itself. And this woman who came in to check the junior's scan, she had studied something very rare for the last 2 years as part of a thesis called amniotic band syndrome. And she said to me, she said, I'm pretty sure I can see an amniotic band and I'm pretty sure that it's around the baby's arm and it's around the umbilical cord. And I was like, what does that even mean? And they don't necessarily know how to explain things very well. And she was like, look, I need to prepare a report and I need to send it to your obstetrician. And then, you know, they did the rest of the scan and I walked out of there and I sat in my car and I Googled and definitely don't Google. Essentially what it is where it's a completely freak occurrence. It's not genetic. It's not anything, to the point where I was that crazy, paranoid pregnant person that I Googled everything. I didn't have massages because I didn't have baths. I was like that person who did everything. And I sat there, and it's essentially where a fiber from outside of your uterus breaks through into the amniotic fluid. And it's essentially like a little piece of rope and it wraps around the baby. But because the babies are so small when they're still forming, when it's wrapped around, it can often cut circulation to extremities. In some cases, you know, there's amniotic bands that wrap around babies' heads, around their stomachs and things like that, and cause a lot of internal and external damage. In Vienna's case, it was her arm and her umbilical cord. So I was a mess. I literally I couldn't even drive home. I was meant to go back to work that day because, you know, I'm that person that I go straight back into meetings after things like that. And I just went home and just cried for like 2 days straight. And yeah, it was one of those things where I literally, I was like, how am I going to function? How am I going to tell people that the baby might not even be a baby anymore? I'd started telling people and things like that. But more than anything, it was like, how am I going to tell people that my baby is going to be deformed? And just crying in bed thinking, why me? And why not, you know, people who do drugs and alcohol when they're pregnant, like why me, when I literally thought I had done everything right? And my husband went into the room and he just said, he was like, and this makes me so emotional. He's like, why not us? And he's like, you know, we are the most well-equipped, you know, strong couple. He's a social worker, you know, beautiful, beautiful man. He was like, we can do this as long as she's here. And she, you know, she's chosen us, then we can do this together. We can get through this. That was kind of the start of rebuilding and me also knowing that I had to, they feel everything, you know, like I believe that, you know, they're a part of you. And I didn't want her to feel like I was sad about something, you know, that might just be a physical disability. So that was a massive sort of 12-week scan. We knew that she was a girl. We knew her name from 10 weeks. So that really helped me in terms of being able to bond with her and like just get through it. And I made a decision not to tell many people, which was a massive mental load in that, you know, everyone asks you, oh my gosh, how are you? Like, how's the baby? You look beautiful. And I, you know, I didn't want anyone to feel sorry for me. I'm not that sort of person. I am more of an internalizer and I, you know, have that mental chat there. So yeah, I told a few people, but for the most part, no one knew. And that was really hard for me because I'm a really open book. I'm very sort of, I say it like it is. And that was a little bit of a struggle. But for the most part, you know, once I came to terms with the fact that, yes, she probably would have an arm amputated sometime throughout my pregnancy, I was okay with that. It was more the fact that it was threatening her umbilical cord. And every day of that pregnancy, I didn't know she was alive. Every single day. If I didn't feel her kick for an hour, my anxiety would just be, you know, through the roof. And then, yeah, so like it's traumatic. And it wasn't actually until my second child that I realized just how traumatized I was. Finding out about Vienna was so awful. But in hindsight now, she's the most incredible, incredible, amazing human. The thought that she, you know, could have not been here devastates me. And it also devastates me, you know, the path of obstetrician care that I had from there. You know, I had an amazing obstetrician. She was always pro, you know, like, well, you can do this. But I was referred to the fetal management unit in Melbourne, where straight out of the bat they were like, okay, you know, you can abort up to this many weeks, because of, I think it was something like you literally could abort anywhere up to full term if you had a sign off of two doctors. Which is just crazy.
And is that just based on limb difference, not even like health complications?
Correct. Yes. So anyway, the man that was telling me this, I was in this, you know, this room, and each to their own, like everyone has their own journey. But for me, He sat me down, and it also had been stated on my referral twice in the referral that I didn't want to discuss it, and he discussed it with me. And it got to the stage where I literally said to him, I said, can I just confirm that everything else is going to be okay with her? Like, it's just simply that she might have one arm. And he was like, oh, yeah, everything I've looked over her stats, everything's all good. And then he could see that I was really pissed off, and he made a joke like, oh, yeah, you know, she'll be in the Paralympics one day. So the actual care that I sort of, the journey of that care, and, you know, it opened me up to a world of probably medical trauma in terms of like those sort of things. When I am a very opinionated and strong individual, I can only imagine how some people had felt if they were a single mum going through this, or if they were someone who, you know, didn't have the blessings that we had to support a child with a disability. Yeah, it was crazy.
So you've obviously worked on empowering yourselves to manage this, but when you were hearing things like that, what did it do for your fear of ableism, of that feeling of, I'm already protecting her from the world, what is this going to look like when she's here?
Oh, that was that was my main concern with all of this in the end. Once I'd come to terms with it, honestly, that was my main concern, where I was more worried about how she would be perceived by others. I was more worried about people, you know, treating her like she was something less than what she was. So that actually was my concern the whole pregnancy, how she would be received by the world and how she would be treated. Not so much once I'd come to terms with the fact that it was going to happen. It's one of those things where I've had friends tell me, they were like, before knowing Vienna, like, we probably would have terminated. And now that they've seen Vienna, they're horrified by the fact that, you know, like, we as a society are so obsessed with perfectionism. We're so obsessed with, you know, what's normal, that I think we've become a lot better since social media and campaigns and things like that in embracing disability, difference, everything like that. So I think we're way better than we ever were. But yeah, they were the things that were literally going through my mind every single day. And it was every single time I'd have an interaction with someone who talked about the baby and didn't know. That's what was on the back of my mind.
Can totally imagine. Talk about a mental load. So then you do meet Vienna.
Yeah.
Tell us about the early days of motherhood.
Well, firstly, we also didn't know the extent of, you know, her amputation leading into her birth. She was transverse, so she was stuck sideways. I actually wasn't allowed to go into labor, so we had a beautiful C-section, and it was during the C-section, obviously, that we saw her difference in the flesh for the first time. And it was a little bit shorter than we expected. So her amputation was above her elbow, and she's got this beautiful little arm that we call it. And I actually as well waited 3 days after the announcing of her arrival to tell everyone about her limb difference. So we announced Vienna's birth because I didn't want her difference to be like, you know, at the forefront. And then 3 days later, and I found it really therapeutic, the posting and the telling the world about her difference, I just wept, mostly because I could finally, I didn't have to hold it in anymore. Like, I literally cried just because I was so happy to not have to carry that anymore. And she was received beautifully. But yeah, she is the most special unicorn baby ever. So even though she's got this limb difference, and I can see it now that I've got a second child, like, she is amazing. And one of the doctors who specialize in a lot of these limb difference children, he said that he calls them angel babies because they literally are angel babies.
Yeah.
So it's a blessing to be her mum every single day. Her personality is just amazing. From a very young age, she would never let anyone help her with anything. You know, when she first started walking, she wanted to walk up the stairs. And if we helped her, she would scream until we put her at the bottom of the stairs again so that she could do it all on her own. And that's kind of the vivaciousness she's brought into her life and ours. She's very, very disciplined and hardworking. And yeah, she teaches us every day. There's not a day that goes by that my husband and I don't just look at each other and we're like, wow, it's crazy. The other day, actually, my husband messaged me and he was like, you'll never guess what Vienna just told me. So she's 4 now. So we've had 4 years of her learning her little unique way of life. He said something to her, I think, about her little arm, or we like to discuss it a lot, and you know, we don't shy away from hard conversations with her. And she looked him in the eye and she goes, "You know what, Dad? You get what you get and you don't complain."
Oh my God. You get what you get and you don't get upset.
Oh, that's it. Oh, that's exactly it. What she said.
No, oh so my God.
She said, because we had never heard of it before, she goes, "You get what you get and you don't get upset." So she's obviously heard it from someone before and applied that to herself. And he just laughed and he's like, "Man, she's special." So oh, yeah.
She sounds like she was definitely brought here to teach us something. So then what did maternity leave look like for a business owner? How long did you take? Did you stick to that? Did you have any comms with the team? How did it all look?
She was born November 2019, so end of November 2019. We had a magical summer. So the team, they literally were amazing. I high level sort of kept my finger on the pulse, but I really wanted to have that time at home. And then COVID hit. So,
of course.
Yeah. So I was planning on having a really, you know, maybe 6 months of just, you know, easing into maternity leave and everything like that. And Vienna was 12 weeks old and COVID hit. So I was flung back into just survival mode, which is like, sometimes I'm like, that's really sad. Like, you know, that I had to go into survival mode being a business owner whilst having a 12-week-old, but it was still incredible. And the benefit of lockdown was that I was forced to stay at home and, you know, spend that special time with Vienna. But we did have to, you know, my husband and I did a lot of like tag teaming so that I could go into, you know, emergency mode, where we had to close our stores and stand employees down. And I had to do all of the emails and I had to make sure that everyone felt like safe and everything like that. So that whole year was really navigating from a high level whilst having a baby, what we were going to do, pivoting. We actually then had huge growth during COVID. Being an online business, people were spending so much more money online instead of going out or traveling. And so we were actually trying to juggle growth with the stores closed. Our Melbourne store was closed most of the year. So it was then about training and getting them to help us with dispatching and customer care, things like that. So there was a lot on that happened during that maternity leave. And I always am a little bit jealous of, you know, people who can simply just, you know, tap out and simply enjoy their baby and everything like that. But by the same token, I also have freedom being a business owner now, where I do feel like I have the best of both worlds. I only come into work 3 days a week and then I'm with my babies the rest of the time.
That is incredible. And I don't think until this moment did I realize the extra caregiving that mothers in management were doing in their paid work and at home during COVID. My manager is a mother of two, or my ex-manager where I used to work is a mother of two. And it's only dawned on me now that you are caring for people at work and at home. What was that like? Did you burn out after that period?
I was pretty exhausted, I won't lie. So I took on that mental load of really worrying for my team, that they were worried that their safety was, you know, compromised. And yeah, I think it's one of those, to be honest, it's a massive blur. And all I can remember is just really having to be there emotionally for a massive team and make sure I communicated in the depths of sleep deprivation as well.
And hormone fluctuations, by the way.
So the biggest, I feel like in hindsight, if it was like a second or third baby, it wouldn't have been as full on, only because for me, that first baby was like this, yes, you have to keep a human alive. Yes, your boobs are aching. But for me, I had this overwhelming like shift and just huge personal development thoughts, like going everywhere. I started grieving, you know, my mum and I've got my mum, but, you know, the things that my mum has been through, I was like, I had no idea. You know, you did four children with like no support around you and grieving that. And then I was, it must have been the hormones, because literally I was just, it was just wild. And for me, being a business owner, I like to control things, and I could control somewhat the, you know, the COVID practices and how we communicate, and I could do business mode. But what I really struggled with was that a baby, you can't control. Like, I read every sleep guide, I read every routine. I couldn't even fathom that there was like different approaches. Like, some people say wake the baby, other people say don't wake the baby. So I actually had a bit of a personal breakdown around like 6 months, because I couldn't fathom that there wasn't like a unified approach to this motherhood thing. I like to study things and then apply, like I did in business, and this shit was just like unpredictable. And now I know that I actually had an angel unicorn child, but like my brain was following these sleep guides being like, okay, she needs to have a 2-hour nap from 12:30 to 2:30. If she woke at 2:20, I would have a breakdown. That's how bad it was, because I was trying to control everything.
One of the best lessons in motherhood, I think, that you can control nothing.
And as well, I think the biggest thing that happened for me, and this blew me out of the water for that first year. And I think, you know, maybe not every woman goes through this, but for me, I was more aware of my behavior rubbing off on Vienna, and especially the behaviors that I resisted in myself. So the constant need for achievement that was driving me into the ground, I then realized that I was unconsciously projecting that on her. Like, every time she did something, I would clap and like she'd turn around. And then one day I literally was in the lounge room and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm perpetuating this thing that, you know, has nearly destroyed me onto her. And so like just crazy personal development happened during that first year.
I know those feelings. It's so full on.
Yeah. And then also no one tells you how much you're going to resent your husband's freedom, resent his, you know, like personal freedom and body freedom, things like that. So that was another thing. It was like, you know, how do you successfully communicate to your husband without killing each other during that first year? So it's just all slammed in there.
You're speaking to my soul there. I once said to my husband, you could do everything right in the house, in your thinking, but I still have to carry and birth these babies. And I do choose to breastfeed, but I guess a lot of that's societal as well. It's like all these things being even, it's still such a load that mothers carry. And yes, we are grateful for it in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, I want to be the person taking the parental leave. But the paradox is it also nearly can destroy you at some time. So it's such a wild learning. So then you have this pretty wild, I guess, intro to balancing work and motherhood, paid work and motherhood, I should say. Is there any planning into when you'll add the second child to your family in terms of having that presence back in the workforce? Or are you not really thinking that way when you think about adding Elijah, or who will eventually become Elijah, to your family?
Well, look, I like controlling things, but I'm not a very good planner. So to be honest, it's funny now because as he gets older and he's the age of when I conceived him, like literally I was like, what was I thinking? Like, I can't even believe that we're even like, you know, sexually active still at that age.
Oh, as in Vienna's age when you could, yes, sorry, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Because I always think about it, because he's nearly two now, and even still I'm like, oh, no way, I would not have another child even if he was the first. So to be honest, I don't know what I was thinking. Again, I think it was a bit of a blur, because what had happened at that stage was once we were recovered from COVID, Vienna was, I think, you know, one by that stage. So things did become easier. Like, I really remember that age one, you kind of feel a bit of freedom, like you've come out of like this cocoon. So for me, we were really enjoying that age one to 18 months. I'd stopped breastfeeding at 18 months. Again, you know, breastfeeding and all of the regressions and everything like that, I was I didn't want to give up. It was a bit of an ego thing. I wanted to be that mum that, you know, breastfed as long as possible. So I just finished breastfeeding. And then, oh gosh, what was I doing? I think I was at home one night and I was like, oh, I feel really nauseous.
Did it take you as a surprise this time around, or were you like, shit, I know what's happening here?
No, it was a Monday night. I remember I was at home and I was really tired because, again, even though I'm sleepless with, you know, a baby, I actually have a lot of energy. Normally it's my body that breaks down and, you know, I push it too far.
I'm exactly the same as you. It's like I don't let my body relax because my mind is too busy.
Yes, that is me, 100%. So any tips are very welcome. But I literally, it was like 6 o'clock and I was like, man, I feel really nauseous. Like I had, and I said to my sister, I think I have food poisoning. She wrote back being like, are you pregnant? And I was like, no. And at this stage, I think Vienna was like 19 months old. Then I just went about my week. And it's funny because the previous week there was a rumor around work that I was pregnant. And I announced at a massive team meeting. It's like, whoever started that rumor that I'm pregnant, I'm not. Well, apparently I was and didn't know. And then, that 5 days went on and I actually went to get a facial with Laser Genesis and they made me like sign this disclaimer to say that I wasn't pregnant. And she was the first person, I didn't even mention it to BJ that I was even like my husband, that I was even like contemplating that I could be. I said to her, I said, you know what, there's like a small chance that I might be pregnant because I'm feeling really average. And then she's like, oh, well, we won't do the facial today. And I went home and took a test and I was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do two kids with the business?
So then how did you do it? Tell us about the early days of Elijah.
Yeah, so with Vienna, the biggest thing that I realized running a business or, you know, if you're in a high-powered sort of paid position, the biggest thing with her and that first child was I just needed the support and the hierarchy within the business. So that's what I really focused on then. With Elijah, I was like, okay, I've been able to, you know, have one kid, you know, running around and I can usually do some work on my laptop. And I feel like in hindsight, you know, it was hard when I had one kid, but now having two kids, I'm like, one kid is a breeze. So with her, it was manageable. As soon as I found out I was pregnant with Elijah, I was like, this is not going to work. And I needed to systemize the business. So we actually got a consultant in when I was pregnant and I was like, please, I need help to fully systemize the business, but as well to get everything that's in my brain out onto paper so that it's not as dependent on me. So that's what we did. So we really had like 8 months countdown to systemize the whole business. And to be honest, like I'm so proud to be a female CEO and to run the business that we do, because there is no way standing here today that the business would operate as amazingly as it does if I didn't have kids. If I was a man, like I know so many people are like, you know, oh, it's such a man's world. It totally is, but there's nothing better than deadlines and the need, you know, to, I guess, systemize yourself out of the business. So what it really helped me do was systemize. And I went into that second pregnancy telling my team that I was being selfish, and I wanted 6 months away from the business. Like, because I felt like, you know, my maternity leave had been robbed with Vienna. I said to them from the get-go, I said, we are streamlining this business so that it operates without me. And that has been the best thing that has ever happened. You know, I think Elijah came along at the perfect time because I was starting to get into that period of kind of just burning the candle at both ends way too much. I was trying to be, you know, a mum full-time, business full-time, but with no systems. And I was really exhausted again. So his pregnancy and everything like that really forced me to systemize the crap out of the business.
It's funny you saying that you wanted to get everything out of your brain onto paper, because I'm just imagining what ended up on the paper being like a floor plan of a city, not like notes, because your mind is a city.
So what it is, and it's beautiful, but it literally is something that I'm so proud of and that I talked to so many, like I had two groups of male business owners from Auckland and from Perth where I showed them this city, you know, of how the whole business operates. It's like traffic lights. And it literally, the whole spreadsheets and everything is a traffic light system so that I don't have to be in there doing the numbers every single day like I used to. And it's like this holy grail of just something that works. So it was the infrastructure. So I built the infrastructure of the business and all of the automations and the traffic lights when Elijah was baking in my belly, so that now that's what gave me time freedom. So I was able to then come in post him and actually sit on top. And now I'm really living in a life where I'm not stuck in the day to day. I'm doing what I love, which is strategy, people, and all of the exciting things that gives me energy. And I think if I hadn't have done that and forced myself out of the day to day, I'll be a lot more unhappy and just doing those things that just took energy from me.
So do you think then one of the biggest lessons you've had in business as a mother is the idea of letting go?
Mm-hmm. Oh, honestly, because something has to let go. I had worked 10 years of just slogging myself. If I didn't work that hard to have, you know, somewhat presence with my kids or freedom to spend time with my kids, then what was it for? For me, I had to let go. And it was challenging, but finding the right people that I could empower that saw the business as their baby too. And they also, I actually in a way needed their permission. And I was going to come back at 4 months old with Elijah, and they said, Hannah, take more time. Like, it's almost like, and I just wanted to cry. I was so excited. I was so happy that I could take that time extra, you know, that my team were telling me to, because something does need to be compromised, whether or not it's, you know, working your way up to higher positions, which is what so many women do. They do it because they know that family is everything. And I think we need to live in a world where there's more choice and there's more, flexibility. I every day am grateful that I have the flexibility to choose if I want to be a mum today full time or if I want to be a business owner or the two. Even though I'm jealous of people who get 12 months of maternity leave, I also am sad for people who don't have that choice. The amount of compromise that women have to, you know, go through, and how stretched we are being a modern mum, it is for me, who thought, you know, I was a bit proud and a bit arrogant in terms of going into motherhood thinking it was so easy. Being a full-time mum is harder than being a boss to 75 women, to 75 staff, like hands down. No wonder guys just like, you know, getting out the door to work, because it's a mental load that I have never experienced before becoming a mum.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So then you're a mother of two, you've got this big business. I think your kids are around 4 and 2 now. What does making work look like to you? What does a day in the life look like?
Yeah. So, okay. A typical day in the life. Currently my husband and I we're divide and conquer. So often we're sleeping in separate beds because one creeps into our bed in the middle of the night. And my 2-year-old has decided that he's scared of his room. So from the outset, I either wake up with Vienna or wake up with Elijah. And, you know, it's that game of really communicating day to day. I wake up, I say to my husband, what's on for you? And then we both, you know, we're getting them fed, we're getting them dressed, we're managing the chaos of the morning. And then often I will drop Vienna to daycare and then come into work. So as well, we drop her off, she's just started school actually, 8:45. I drop her off. I'm so fortunate that I don't have a really judgy work family. I come in at 9:30 most days into the office, and I amp myself up and bring full energy. Like, I leave that, you know, the kids behind and bring that full energy so I can do back-to-back meetings. And because I'm not in 5 days a week, I'm just hammered from the moment I walk in. It's just meetings after meetings. And then I walk out the door usually to go get one of the kids. So my mum is amazing. She's an angel. She looks after Elijah, and then Vienna I'll get from school. And then it literally is, I'm back home and I joke. And a lot of the team, I feel like they know motherhood now, because I say, okay, I'm going to go clock into my next job. And it's dinner, it's bath time, it's refereeing the kids' fights. And then it's that countdown until bedtime. And I'm just exhausted. Like, I normally have energy and I'm exhausted. We'll do one bedtime, then I'll move on to the next, and then it's 8:30. And then more often than not, I sit down in front of the TV and I'll catch up on emails and things like that. So that's a work day for me. And often because I'm in meetings all the time at work, a lot of my admin has to be done at home. So even though, you know, I'm only present in at work 3 days a week, when you own your own business, it's always. And then for a home day, which is say like a Wednesday, then that's when I get to plan a fun adventure for the kids. We have just graduated to just one nap a day, which is just the best thing ever, not having to race home or be home all the time. So I'm starting to do it in the car, feel that freedom back, because the nap life, really, I struggle mentally with that. And yeah, it is a case of, even though I can be with my kids on, you know, 4 days of the week, I am juggling work calling me or something popping up, and I have to really consciously push that, you know, that mental thinking about work into the background in order to be present with the kids. That's what I struggle with the most, the mishmash and the blurred lines. So even though it's great being able to have flexibility, you have to live with the mum guilt of every day thinking, was I a good enough mum today, or was I a good enough business owner today? I think every mum does that, but that's heavy for me.
I'm noticing that a lot too, and I don't run a big business. I'm just running my own show with a coworker, but I'm really noticing and conscious of and thinking of, how do I remain present when I am with my kids and not think about work? Where is the boundary for you in terms of what call you will and won't take on a kid day?
From the get-go, I really struggle with it. And to the point where even, you know, I'll knowingly pick up my phone. Like, it's a bit of, so it's a work in progress. I'm really finding that I have to, you know, put my phone down and leave it in the other room, and then go and be present with the kids for 30 minutes. Or I'm guilty of that TV time and things like that to get some emails done. But I think the biggest thing is just being aware and not judging yourself for, like, it has to be, you know, a bit of a flow. Sometimes they're happily playing, sometimes they're on me. It's just a daily compromise. So I think it's a lot of the tension is actually in my head, and making sure that I just don't, that I'm okay with it. That, you know, yes, they might see me on my phone more than another mum. Like, I'll see those, you know, full-time mums and just be like, wow, they're just really so present. But as well, they also see me being inspiring and running a business and, you know, being a woman who does have both sides. So I think, you know, I have turned in recent months, especially, it's only new, to, instead of sort of like judging myself, kind of celebrating the fact that those kids, you know, they have amazing family around them. They get more time with their dad than they would if I was a stay-at-home mum, things like that. So trying to sort of daily just tweak those thoughts.
The grass is always greener, and I feel like there's pros and cons to literally every situation. So I think that's great advice. I have two more questions for you, and then I'm going to let you go because you're a busy woman. You employ some pretty special people. Can you tell us about the incredible refugee women that work in your organisation?
Yeah, so for us, it actually was years ago, I think 6 years ago, that we kind of realised that we can't just make jewelry, you know. I think everyone has that sort of like identity crisis within their job where you're like, we just sell jewelry. And we decided that we really wanted to be more in line with our personal values, my sister and I, of giving and making a difference. And so we started a whole heap of charity within the business, of awareness bracelets and things like that. But the biggest thing is, and especially having a husband who is a social worker, seeing the amount of migrant women, especially, coming into our communities Australia-wide and really not being given opportunity to work or to be, you know, incorporated in our community. We found that that was really sad. Even when I was working at the markets, I had friends in social work, and they would come through the markets with all these migrant women who had no idea of like the amazing community that we have. So when we were hiring for beaders, so we still make all of our bracelets in-house in Hobart. When we were hiring for beaders, I was like, why don't we hire some people who are from the migrant community? So refugee women, they don't have great English. They don't need great English, but a lot of them are like crazy talented textile makers and things like that. Like, the talent that's in these communities is amazing. So we hired four beautiful African ladies 6 years ago, And we were originally only going to be like a pathway to employment because a lot of people knew Francesca. We were going to be their, you know, their resume reference after 6 months working with us. We fell in love with them and they're still here 6.5 years on. We've hired like more women from Afghanistan, more beautiful women from Africa. And they are like the heart and like some of the purpose behind coming to work every day. Like seeing them, knowing and hearing their journeys of motherhood. Like one of them was her job in the refugee camp for 8 years was to look after all of the orphans. These kids that just, you know, their parents were often shot at the border and they escaped. So like knowing that and walking past her every day, I'm like far out, you know, we have no clue. You know, one of them escaped Eritrea where she lived with a 6-week-old strapped to her and her 2-year-old on her back, you know, like walking for days and they have a 50-50 chance of being basically killed at the border. That's why we do what we do, you know, in trying to make an impact locally. So that to us, and, you know, it just automatically just gives you so much appreciation for how blessed we are in our life. So they are an incredible side of the business and something that we're very proud of. And they all know fluent English now, come and make killer lunches for us, beautiful, beautiful meals when we have African days and things like that. So, yeah. Really, one of the best decisions in business that we've ever made is including a wider demographic in our workforce.
I was about to ask you what you've learned from them, but I feel like you've just told me all of the incredible things you've learned from them. I'm sure there's a million others. It's so incredible what you're doing. And that really stood out to me when I met you and your sister at that memo event. Last one from me. If you could implant one message in your daughter's brain about her limb difference as she moves through the world and gets older, what would that be?
I think that it's, you know, it's that life isn't always going to be easy, but it's the challenges that have made me a better person and the challenges in my life that's made my life more rich. So I'm hoping that the challenges that she has and has in the future will probably make her life more rich than be something to be sad about.
That's a beautiful note to end on. Hannah, if people want to find you or Francesca online, where should they go?
Yeah, so they can head over to our Instagram, which is at Francesca Jewelry, or our website is francesca.com.au. And we've got 2 stores, Hobart and Melbourne Central.
Thank you so much for sharing your incredibly colourful story. You've lived a lot of lives.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.